All right. This is the New Glarus Brewing Podcast with Dan Carey. This week, we don't have Dan Carey here in our little studio at Riverside overlooking our copper kettles, but we have someone who I'm really excited to talk to. We have Chris Drosner. Chris is a journalist with over 20 years experience in Wisconsin. He is currently the executive editor of Milwaukee Magazine, and you may know him from his column, The Beer Baron, in the Wisconsin State Journal for the last 10 years. Chris, how are you doing this fine evening?
I'm doing great, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no problem. I was really looking forward to talking to you, and I was really excited when you agreed to do this because, as I told you a little bit before, as we were chatting before I hit record, I've been following your work as the Wisconsin Beer Baron in the State Journal now four years, and as you tweet at Wisconsin Beer Baron on Twitter, I always enjoy seeing your avatar pop up because I know I'm gonna get some Wisconsin beer content, and that always makes me very, very happy.
Well, thanks. It's fun to take a fun topic seriously, and that's kind of what I go for with the Beer Baron.
And you make a really good point in that taking something that is fun and then taking it very, very seriously sort of gets to, like, you know, the meat and potatoes of what you're working with on any given topic, right? And in this case, beer, and I find it intersects in so many interesting ways with life and politics and agriculture, and these things have come up in my conversations with Dan. So talking to you, I'm very excited to sort of get your take on, you know, sort of beer culture in Wisconsin, beer culture culture nationally.
Sure. It's a little backwards from a lot of the beer writing, the beer writers, I guess, out there, in that I come from the journalistic side first. So I have always kind of been a beer drinker and a craft beer drinker, but I kind of got more serious about it through my first job after college. I was on the copy desk at the Green Bay Press Gazette. Copy desk is like editing stories, writing headlines, designing pages, that sort of thing. And being an early 20-something fresh out of college, they asked me, like, so what do you want to do other stuff? Like, write. And I was like, you know, well, they came to me with this idea was like, do you want to write a bar column? And I'm like, well, I go to bars all the time. I work at night. I'm 22. Like, yeah, I can do that.
That's right in your wheelhouse at 22.
Yes, right. So a bar column about, like, you know, local bars and, essentially reviews or kind of little business profiles, essentially, is kind of how it started out. I added a little bit of music writing here and there, kind of some general lifestyle writing. And then, the Press Gazette at the time had a beer column, and it was, not a very serious one. It was called The Brew Guru, and it didn't have the editor who wrote it didn't have his name attached to it or anything. And it was not, it's not particularly good or very serious. And
yeah, you can kind of tell if someone's not they're not taking the column very seriously when the name isn't attached to it, I guess.
Right. Like, there's no accountability at all or anything.
Yeah.
And eventually he got sick of it and didn't want to do it anymore. And they were like, well, you're kind of our, you know, like, alcohol and vice writer. Do you want to take on beer too? And I'm like, sure. I mean, I can do that. And eventually I started out kind of taking on his voice and the kind of goofiness of it. But eventually I kind of started getting a little bit more serious and kind of, treating it with, some modicum, at least of the, you know, the respect that I give, beer now, in the Beer Baron. But it was a pretty gradual thing. At some point in there, I moved from Green Bay to Madison, but I continued freelancing it back occasionally to the Press Gazette. And it started getting a little bit more ambitious. Like, I remember one of the projects I did, and this was probably like 2006 or 7 or maybe 8, was like a cheap beer smackdown. And I went to like Woodman's and bought like as many cheap beers as I could and kind of just like handicapped them. And like, the idea was kind of like the beers, like, you know, summer beer, you're going to drink a lot of beer, what have. And like, you know, That's actually
really, really cool. Do you remember who came out on top of your cheap beer SmackDown?
PBR was my favorite. I did basically a little sidebar on. That was a different one. No, that was a different thing. But yeah, like PBR was the top, but that was also the most expensive. So it's like, well, so basically it was kind of like this sliding scale of like cheapness versus basically how bad it was. Blacks was very low.
I know one Twitter handle old, that might find that offensive.
Yeah. Old Blatty. He's a Twitter friend of mine at least, but we agree to disagree on Blacks, but eventually, I mean, that I guess that like point being there is that it kind of started to get a little bit more serious and mm-hmm. kind of moved to, but like still fun, you know?
Yeah.
And eventually I went to the features editor at the State Journal where I was actually working at the time and was like, hey, do you, like, I do this thing, you know about this, like, do you want me to do it for us instead? And she's like, yes, of course. Okay. So, and the Beer Baron was born after a night of homebrewing, like one of my only two nights I've ever homebrewed. A couple of friends of mine came over and we brewed together and brainstormed some ideas on what to call the column. We did one of those things where you have like a list of a big list of terms on each side of a piece of paper. And then you kind of just cross them up, you know, mm-hmm. one side was like, you know, the column or the blog or the concept of like writing something or like a person or a personality. And the other side was all beer terms, you know?
Yeah.
And we were crossing all these things up and they were all horrible. And then like the next morning I'm like hungover. I'm like, ugh. And I was like, well, what about the Beer Baron? Like, and I think I was watching The Simpsons or something, or Simpsons rerun was on, and that it is explicit. So the Beer Baron is explicitly a Simpsons reference. It is not meant to be self-aggrandizing or anything like that. But
what I think is awesome about that. What I think is awesome about that anecdote is that's how it always works out. You're like, you know, in this case, you're having fun, you're having beers and stuff, and you're like, oh, everything we're coming up with just sucks. I don't like any of this. And then the next day, it's always when you step away for a second.
Totally. The best one that we came up with, or the one that like, I mean, it was horrible, but the one that we kept on coming back to was the, this is so stupid. I can't believe I'm saying this, but it was the Brew Wrangler.
The Brew Wrangler?
The Brew Wrangler. And I remember I drew like a little guy on a horse, like a real crude drawing of a little guy on a horse,
like, a lasso
with a cowboy hat. And I'm like, and the whole point was like, it's really hard to say, so it would be funny, kind of like in the like the rural juror.
Yeah, that's exactly where I went.
Kind of contemporary at the time. Oh god, it was so bad. But yeah, thank god Beer Baron came through. And I mean, I certainly didn't think it would last 12 years as it has, so that's something. But I, you know, the it's interesting, the first beer that I reviewed or wrote about, like kind of the introductory, like, hey, I'm the Beer Baron column, was actually Moon Man. I think it's April of 2020 or 2011.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, it was getting into like, and the writing has evolved quite a bit and really like dramatically improved, I would say. And just the understanding of like what, you know, like style, you know, knowing styles and understanding the brewing process, understanding the beer business, being a beer, having a beer column can be a lot of things, right? Like mm-hmm. it can be about the brewing business and brewery expansions and the openings and closings and, you know, that sort of thing. It can be just a straight review column, and it can be, hey, here's an awesome new pale ale, or here's a new whatever, you know, Scotch ale from local brewery. And it can be trends. It can be here's something that brewers are doing now. And you know, the Beer Baron column has been all of those things throughout its life. And it's obviously, I guess, kind of fast forwarding a little bit, like it didn't take long after that first column before I got like my first real kind of wake up call of like, hey, this is like, this can be taken a lot more seriously than you have been taking it, you know, with the brew guru stuff.
Yeah.
And it was an email from Kirby Nelson. he who was at the time was the, you know, like kind of legendary brewmaster and founder of Capital Brewery.
Yeah.
And
100%.
And he sent me an email and it was like, I think I had written about Dale's Pale Ale, which is something that I would you know, the focus of the column has shifted a lot more and become a lot more narrowly focused on Wisconsin beer at the time. But like in 2011, you know, if you were going to like, and when with the, an entire field of like basically craft beer in front of you, it mm-hmm. was a lot easier to kind of like, kind of pick something random and write about it. And I was like, hey, this beer's in cans. That's cool for summer, I guess. And which was a little bit novel at the time still.
Yeah, and, because craft beer was largely sort of defined at that, you know, it through its inception, through the like late teens was largely defined in like the bottle versus can dichotomy, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was an indicator that you were drinking something that was not like good. It was old. I mean, I think maybe mm-hmm. was maybe is a better way to put it. And of course, like, you know, Oscar Blues recognized that, hey, there's like, you know, we're in Colorado. It's a lot easier to take six pack of beer in your backpack up a hiking trail, up a mountain or whatever, or, you know, if you're going like fly fishing or something, to take that rather than a bulky and clinky and heavy six pack of bottles. So they recognize what we saw or what we see now in the marketplace, you know, mm-hmm. a fold probably, you know, 5 to 6 years earlier than it was really widely adopted. But Kirby emailed me and was like, hey, actually, a local brewery that matters more has had its beer in can a long time. And that's me. You should come over. And he's kind of given me the third degree. I was like, oh my God, I'm scared. It's like, it's like your uncle, like telling you that you did a bad job or something. And I wrote him this very serious email back, and it's like, thank you for taking the time to blah, 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 blah. And then, immediate response was like, ah, don't worry about it. You should come out and taste some Eternal Flame out of the tanks. I'm like, oh, wow. Or Eternal, I'm blanking on the name now. Eternal Fire, Eternal Flame.
Autumnal.
It was their blended kind of like Solera Doppelbach, you know, the Autumnal Fire.
Autumnal Fire.
Kind of base, but then they did like a vertical of it.
Oh, okay.
Like a vertical Solera type thing.
Yeah.
It was very cool. And I'm like, oh my God, drink beer out of the tanks. Like, go to Kirby Nelson's. Like, so that kind of was my first introduction to what the column really became, was meeting these people, finding out, you know, getting actual information about the beer that's not on the label,
mm-hmm.
and asking questions and really starting to tell the story of the people and the beers, really, you know, in a more kind of intimate and detailed way. And that's kind of been the, you know, the approach ever since then. And obviously, you know, like I said before, you pull in a lot of trends and, you know, new ingredients, trending hops, you know, there's so much to write about, as long as there's, you know, an audience there for it. And you know, during the last decade plus, there has been. So,
well, yeah, and a couple
very exciting and
yeah, no, sorry, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just verbal filler there. So you go ahead, Scott.
No, I was going to say,
sounds like you had a good question.
A couple of things sort of strike me in that. And where we started off and talking about the column is taking, you know, something that's supposed to be fun, but taking it rather seriously. And then talking to brewers and getting to know, you know, some of the people just around here is how seriously, you know, brewers and the people who work at the breweries take their craft, right? And so I think when someone like you comes along and they can see you're obviously going a little bit deeper than the, you know, the normal sort of, hey, let's put in a few beer jokes and write a column about drinking or beer, but actually taking the product they're producing and they have that kind of pride in seriously, you know, I think it sounds like you very quickly found, you know, an audience or at least a receptive, you know, receptive group of people who wanted their story sort of told in this way.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, Madison did have like legit beer journalists, you know, before I got there. I mean, mm-hmm. I want to make that clear that, you know, like Robin Shepherd was writing, you know, had been his Isthmus column for a while. And he was definitely doing that where he was getting out and getting to know brewers and talking to them about the craft. But I think there was so much, you know, I mean, beer blogging was a big thing around this time and for the few, particularly in the few years before that. So, and that was kind of the primary way that people, I think a lot of people were finding out about beer and stuff. And this, I think this is a, issue, I guess, with beer media even today is that people just weren't taking it seriously. Mm-hmm. It's a fun subject. So, and I like to get drunk, and I mean, a lot of the tone around it, especially, and even from people who are professional journalists or media people, but as soon as they start talking about beer, it gets goofy and it's like, oh, we're going to get drunk. And, you know, like they're making jokes about stuff like that. And I think what Kirby saw in me right away was somebody who was taking what they were doing as seriously as they were, from a very different angle, obviously. Like, I'm writing about it and wanting to tell these stories, but I think people recognize that, you know, like, okay, this guy might not know a whole lot yet, but at least he's asking questions and doing, you know, going about it the right way. And then I think the more columns that I wrote, you know, that kind of got out there a little bit more. And, you know, obviously that's how you build expertise, is talking to people who know more about stuff than you do.
And I think that makes you perfectly situated, though, in coming to a subject, you know, like beer. I think if you're already sort of like well steeped in the culture and well steeped in like what everything means, there can, you know, and as we're talking about beer media, and I was there for sort of, I probably came online as far as beer culture and just general beer things were concerned, besides, you know, just drinking beer to enjoy beer, which is a fun pastime. But, around 2013, 2014 is sort of when I got sort of tuned into what all was going on with craft beer. And you would see like
heady times.
Yeah. I mean, that was the times of like people writing dissertations on Beer Advocate, right? Like, as far as reviews and stuff go, people are starting to take it really, really seriously. So, you know, if you were to come to it with like the, oh, I already know all the stuff I need to know, and I can be sort of the smart guy, just sort of take my take on it. I think it doesn't lend to like the openness that I think your column is sort of known for. Did any of that make sense to you?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think that the journalist, I mean, the approach of the journalist is that you don't know mm-hmm. anything. You have to have sources tell you what's going on, and then you're communicating, you're taking that, you're distilling it, you're synthesizing it, you're deciding what makes sense and what doesn't. You're taking into account, you know, people's agendas and the axes that they have to grind or what they're trying to sell or whatever. And you're kind of putting it together in a story, in a narrative that is true and, you know, holds to what you believe to be the truth, which is of course a slippery thing and objective and all that stuff. But, you know, you're serving the key thing is, who are you serving? And you are serving your audience. Mm-hmm. I am not serving the breweries that I'm talking to. I'm not serving the, bars or retailers or whatever. But my job is to serve my reader.
Yes.
And so that is a very different approach than I think what a lot of people in the beer world were used to. And again, like, I'm not like, I was not breaking new ground on this or anything. You know, there are plenty of good beer journalists before and now, and, you know, at that time. But I think it's a different, you know, when you do it for as long as I guess I have and as Robin Shepherd has at Isthmus, you know, you get a reputation and that can be, hopefully that's either good or bad. But I mean, I've had, you know, people in the beer industry that I respect a lot, you know, tell me that they appreciate that I'm not just, you know, I think they appreciate that independence and kind of speaking. I left that hanging a little bit, but like that kind of speaking what you see as the truth.
Yeah.
And that is there's of course another element to like beer, a beer column, and that's like reviewing things and saying whether you like it or not.
Well, that's what I was going to ask about. Cause to me, and what you're talking about is, you know, when you're writing a review, you're going to start with probably the baseline of like, this is going to be my take. Now, none of this is going to be objective truth, it's just going to be my experience with this beer on this day. And this is how it hit me, or what over a decade I have learned in tasting beer. This is how it hits me, filtered through all of that sort of knowledge. When you're writing a review like that, you know, and is there ever a balancing act between, like you said, you know, you need sources to tell you what's going on, but you're also now in a position as reviewer as well. Is there any tension between those two roles, I guess, is the question I would ask you.
Not really. Yeah. I mean, I mean, first of all, the way that this column works, I don't need to review bad beers most of the time, you know,
and it's not fun. And
I mean, I've written about this in that explicitly in the column is like, and somebody, I hear it on Twitter, occasionally, it's like, well, you don't really write, you know, like, it's not like you're bad reviews. I'm like, that's correct. But the reason is that and it's not that I'm not being critical. It's mm-hmm. that I am using that column as a vehicle for recommendations. That's the way that I am. That's the way that I'm seeing it for my audience, for the most part.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Every once in a while, there'll be a beer that kind of gathers like enough zeitgeist or something where I'm like, okay, I got to review this. And if it turns out to be bad, okay, there we go. I remember talking about like 2013, 2014. I think that was when Budweiser Select. What was the one in the blue bottle that debuted in the Super Bowl?
Oh,
it wasn't Select. It was something Bud. Premium or Steel or I don't know.
Yeah, something
like that. Like super premium Budweiser product. And it had a Super Bowl commercial and I was like, oh, and it kind of came at a time when like craft was kind of a thing that was really becoming, you know, I think it was that was probably in the midst of the kind of craft explosion, I guess.
Yeah. It was that and, time where it was like really starting to move the needle.
Yeah. Yeah. And it had this really like, I remember the commercial was, it had the Kanye West song in it back when before he was like the weirdest dude in the world. And, yeah. It was just this like moment. And I'm like, okay, well there's a beer here. Like it was a weekly column at that point. I'm like, well, okay, we're going to do this. And it was horrible. And I wrote, and I said that, and of course it's really easy to like diss a Budweiser, whatever.
Oh yeah. Beer, yeah. You're not column. Like, it's not like a 10 barrel brewery with a mom pa going, oh geez, thanks. Yeah.
But at the same time, like, okay, here's a more salient example. And this of course turned out to be not a review, but when Nuglaris Brewing, releases a beer just simply called Pilsner, and they say on the side of the can, and in a very revealing podcast that Dan Carey has been on a lifelong quest to perfect the Pilsner. Mm-hmm. And then there's a beer that comes out at the end of this, or, you know, in the current moment, perhaps during this quest, or maybe at the end of the quest, whatever, however you guys want to spin that. But like that beer needs to be reviewed by Wisconsin Beer Column.
Yeah. Right? How could you not if someone says that?
Beer, if Nuglaris Pilsner had sucked, I would have said that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I'd be on this podcast anymore on this very day, but I think that's the kind of negative review that I would write. If something has enough, you know, kind of cachet in the beer world, in the Wisconsin beer world, that it's demanding attention. But every new beer that comes out does not demand attention, especially not lately. I mean, geez, you can't keep track of them all.
Well, that's the thing I want to ask you about.
I would say that Nuglaris, like Nuglaris's releases are, you know, Nuglaris's portfolio is not super wide. It is intentionally pretty focused.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a certain number of new beers that come along. Maybe one or two, I'd say probably maybe one a year or something.
Mm-hmm.
And those I pretty much always review those, and they haven't always been super positive reviews.
And I think everybody,
I guess I'm thinking of,
well, as I say,
the,
I think
peach,
I,
the peach,
oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Scott.
No, as I say, I think, well, and I you think know, everybody I mean, like, here and everybody kind of knows that's part of the deal, you know, like reviews are going to be what they're going
to
be.
And there's a way to do a negative review that is fair. I mean, I'm not, what you have to do is describe what the beer tastes like, describe what the brewer's intent was and what it, you know, what they're, to the degree that you can, you know, explain what they're going for, explain how it tastes, how you liked it, but also like, my palate is not, I am not a super taster. I don't have like an elite palate. I'm a journalist.
I decidedly don't have an elite palate.
There is a review on most of my, there is a review on most of my columns, but it's not the reason that I am in the position that I have. I mean, the reason I'm in the position that I am is because I worked at a newspaper. That's basically
And they needed a beer columnist.
right. I think I kept it on merit and I've continued to do it, mm-hmm. After I've left the State Journal, and I obviously do beer writing for the magazine too, but it's the same respect with the people affected by what you write as like a political reporter would be, was I fair?
Well, and I think that's a very salient point.
But was it fair?
Yeah. And I think that's a very salient point because I've had a lot of chances to interact with political reporters and it is the same sort of a deal kind of. It's you're reporting what is going on, you're reporting what they're saying, and you also have a responsibility to the objective truth as you know it. And whether or not you're going to need that state senator or that assembly rep to talk to you the next day has no bearing on the story you're writing today. Those are completely separate worlds.
You have to do your job. And my job is to say what I think about this beer. And I think as I've done this more and started to, I mean, just drank more beers critically and mm-hmm. Understood more about the beer world and styles and techniques and all this stuff, I feel a lot more confident in my palate than I was even 5 years ago or certainly 10 years ago, but at the same time, like I know, and I also, the other thing that's important in beer criticism or any kind of criticism really is knowing your preferences and your own personal taste. Mm-hmm. Like I, one of the things that surprised me about that I didn't love the Nuclearis, I'm blanking on the name of it, the peach lambic style. It was a thumbprint a couple summers ago.
Nectar
Ale.
I
didn't love that beer. Nectar, yes.
Yeah.
No. It wasn't the Nectar. There was an explicitly peach one.
Oh, okay. Was it an R&D?
Peach. No. It was just a thumbprint.
Oh, I'm blanking on it then too, I guess.
Yeah, here we are.
Yeah.
In any case, like that beer seemed like on paper, that beer was totally right up my alley. I love peach flavor and I like/love almost all of the wild, the wild and the lambic style beers that Dan makes. Mm-hmm. And so here I am and I pour this out and I'm like, oh man, that's a nice big juicy peach. Was that the name of it? Juicy peach? I don't know.
It could be.
This juicy peach nose but it was really sweet and it was too sweet for me. And I was surprised at that. And I don't know. I mean, it's all this stuff is subjective.
Yeah. But that's one of those things that I think is a fair, if it's something fair to bring up as a reviewer of beer. If a beer for your particular palate is on the sweeter end or too sweet for you, I think that is something that is fair to say when you're reviewing a beer, because A, it's not necessarily painting, it's not saying like, and that's a bad thing. It's just saying, and that's not my thing. It might be your thing or it might not be your thing.
Right. It's so I just checked it out. It's Lots of Peach 21.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Which is an apt name. I mean, the headline was a peachy freight train. And I guess like the point is like, I don't want somebody to buy a beer that I review and then be surprised by what they get versus, that's goes back to like that who you're serving part. And it's the reader. And with Nuclearis Pilsner, it's like, yeah, you're going to see this beer around. It's going to be all over the place. And you need to try it. You need to, if you like any beer, you need to try this beer because you're going to like it.
Yeah. And that beer in particular, I really was blown away. Like I said this when we talked about it on the podcast, but he like literally opened that can and the whole room smelled like that beer. It was absolutely insane. absolutely insane to me. And I'm still learning about all of this stuff. I'm not really an expert, and that's why I like talking to Dan and getting this opportunity to talk to people around this thing. Cause to me, this is an endlessly sort of fascinating subject. And one of the things that fascinates me about it, and one of the things I wanted to get your take on with it, is, you know, as you said, sort of, I got to Madison in 01 when I was about 18 years old. And I think the first two six packs I had in my fridge were Autumnal Fire and Spotted Cow, right? That my mom went down to Riley's House of Wines and just got those two six packs and put them in my fridge. And that was my introduction to Wisconsin beer. And then sort of, like I said, it wasn't like I was sort of in tune to that was craft beer. It was just, these are now the beers in my fridge, right? And I remember very distinctly, like a few years later, being at, the Angelic. And having like my first two hearted, right. And being like, whoa, what is this? And I was like 22 or 23 at the time. Over the course of your covering beer and sort of getting more into the minutia of it, what are sort of the changes you've seen in the Wisconsin specific craft zeitgeist?
I mean, I think one big thing that, I think a major trend in the last like 10 years, but really, I mean, well, it's the growth in Wisconsin in quality and like the bench of Wisconsin beer, you know, like if you want to have like great craft beer, you don't need to, if you want to only drink craft beer, great craft beer, you don't really need to buy it from anybody outside Wisconsin anymore. And that did not used to be the case. There's like one of the things that I have to guard against a lot is homerism, because I'm from Wisconsin. I love Wisconsin. I love Wisconsin beer. But I think that's an eyes open assessment of what's going on. And sure, like, you know, we're not going to, you know, there are wild saisons that are being made by like Side Project or Perennial or something I don't think there's a Wisconsin Vit beer that's anything close to Allagash White, you know, but that doesn't mean that you can't get a great experience within pretty much any style without needing to go outside Wisconsin. And I'm not even talking about like beers that are distributed here. I mean, from a Wisconsin brewery.
They don't have to travel far.
And yeah, exactly. I think there are reasons to think about it that way. I know a lot of these people who make these beers. So I, again, that's something that I guard against, but I also think that that is a value that is intrinsic in the kind of the new way that people think about commerce and food and the way all of that kind of interacts together. You know, buy local, that's a thing that matters and that has impact. And I think Wisconsin is a state and a community that values that. And I don't think that, I say this, you know, not like, I don't want to dismiss breweries from outside the state, but like, when was the last time you saw a kind of a tweener regional or national brewery launch in Wisconsin and have really any impact?
Yeah.
And I suspect that's kind of like, that's, I think that's a function of where beer is at everywhere. Like, I bet you there are not, I imagine Lakefront is not having as much success opening a new state as it would have in, you know, 2012 or whatever, you know?
Yeah, and I think like to your point, like, yeah, like Toppling Goliath came, and then we were maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and when Zombie Dust was coming around, I know people were sort of chasing trucks on that. But then, you know, it's weird, because like Wisconsin is parochial, right? We like our stuff from here. We just do. So when we can get something, it's like we try it, and then when we can get it all the time, we're like, okay, no, I don't need that anymore.
Yeah. And I think that that kind of like parochialism has been, I've heard this a lot from out of state brewers, is that they like, Wisconsin is a really appealing market because we drink a ton of beer, but it's also a really challenging market because we like our own beer. And really, New Glarus, I think, is a huge part of that. I mean, New Glarus is a really big brewery in terms of like small brewery terms, right? Yeah. Like, I'm sure it's the 13th largest craft brewery 12th. These days? 12th largest, okay.
Yeah.
And of course, we have lost many, many bigger breweries have graduated from that list as they've become not, you know, air quotes, craft breweries anymore.
Yeah.
As they're bought by international concerns or, you know, big, larger brewing companies and stuff like that. So, but New Glarus is obviously not that at all. And then, of course, like, it's entirely within the Wisconsin borders, which is what makes it such a unique and really unbelievable. Like, if I don't know, it's a singular story in craft beer in the way that the Careys have gone about it and what they've actually succeeded and built. And it's not just a business too. Like, I'm drinking this New Glarus Pilsner right now, and it's really good. Like, the products are of consistently like such high quality that like if I'm a pretty successful brewery in Minnesota or Michigan or Illinois or Iowa, and I'm like, man, I think we're doing great in our state. I'd like to keep growing, and maybe Wisconsin is where we can do that because they drink a ton of beer. It's like, yeah, kinda, but you're gonna have to do a lot of work to put a dent in what New Glarus is doing, of course, but like, you know, like I mentioned, Lakefront, you know, Central Waters, there's a lot of really good/great breweries in Wisconsin. And I think we cherish those breweries as a community. You know, these are cultural assets.
Oh yeah. And oh yeah. 100%.
I think people have, they see them as such.
Yeah. 100%. And with New Glarus, it's funny. 'Cause like, when you look at the story, like on paper, you're like, oh yeah, no, of course that works, right? You have, you know, a diploma master brewer and an entrepreneur, and they start a brewery and it becomes successful. But it's a weird thing when you look at it and you look at what they kind of did, and you're like, I don't know if you have there's not like a playbook there for it, right? It's just so many things have to line up for something like this to happen, I guess.
Well, there's a playbook, but the playbook pointed to the thing that they didn't do. And yeah. I think that has made a huge difference, you know, between I don't know. I'm thinking about like Bell. I mean, Bell's is a different story. But they, you know, that was I'd have to, without having facts in front of me, but I get the sense that those were similar breweries for a while. Bell certainly goes back a little bit further, but
yeah,
you know, I mean, the way that Bell's expanded and I think this is one big question that everybody's going to be thinking about, and that people already are talking about and thinking about it with Wisconsin beer. But in the future, I think it's going to become more acute is, you know, a lot of the big names and, the big players in Wisconsin craft beer are getting on toward retirement age. And, you know, what happens to those breweries now or when that happens could be jarring. I mean, that's what happened with Bell's. You know, Larry Bell retired and they sold to, you know, an international brewer. And, you know, like we saw one of the, and then on the flip side of that is, you know, a few years ago, Tom Porter, at Lake Louis it was a little bit different situation because he's still involved, but he was facing some major health concerns, and he turned to his friend Kirby Nelson, who's now at Wisconsin Brewing, and they worked out a deal where, you know, Wisconsin Brewing purchased Lake Louis, and now essentially Wisconsin Brewing is Lake Louis, at least from the consumer facing side of things. And this, honestly, Scott, this is the kind of stuff that just keeps me glued to this beat, you know, because there's so many interesting angles and storylines and trends, and that's even the business side of things.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much happening with beer right now that is, it's just, it, I mean, it's always been an interesting, you know, thing to cover, and they're showing no signs of slowing. So,
well, yeah, and that's, and I think it, going into the future, craft beer in general is going to be an interesting thing to keep thinking about and keep covering and keep taking seriously, because, you know, what we're seeing now is sort of, an industry that's, you know, started really getting its feet under it in the mid 90s, but started, you know, in the 80s and had its, you know, had its growing pains and had its really sort of time where it had its, you know, we're going into the adult phase of what it means for what means to be a craft brewery anymore, what craft even means, what it's going to mean in the future. There's been wild expansion. How is that going to sustain? How is that going to mold and change? And one thing's always for certain is, you know, especially in the marketplace of beer and in Wisconsin, is things are going to change in ways we probably can't predict.
Yeah, I think back to the conversation that Dan, you had with Dan and Yvonne from and the perspective that Dan has, you know, Dan has so many. I think you might have mentioned this in that episode, he has his feet planted in an entirely different world of beer and brewing and the brewing business than a large majority, I would say, of domestic craft brewers.
Mm-hmm.
Like Yvonne came in late to that Belgian brewing world, relatively speaking, but he was entering something that had been there. He had peers that had been there for centuries.
Oh yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Or certainly decades that precede kind of this, like, you know, intense commercialization. And I think there's reasons to believe that America will be different, but I also think that there's a possibility. Yeah. That maybe things do kind of stabilize and, we do start to get those threads in the American brewing scene to kind of stretch and lengthen and they become, there becomes more stability, versus the last 20 years has been anything but that.
Oh yeah.
And disruption and constant change.
Oh yeah. And that's one of the things that always
think about the,
go, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, think about the beers that are kind of coming into the, I think the more kind of like mainstream now.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, New Glarus has a Pilsner, you know, and, you know, these kind of more traditional classic beers are starting to become a little bit more, commonplace. And I think people are starting to reject some of the fads and trend things. I mean, those things are always going to be there, and I think they're worth covering and they're interesting. And I am fascinated by what brewers continue to, do as far as like, you know, like the Kvike yeast thing, the terpenes, the, like thiolized, you know, yeah, all these different like ways to really like aggressively whole flavor and aroma and all this stuff out of the ingredients that you're working with, but like simplicity and like execution have always mattered in beer. And I think that's something that we can look at. We can look to other cultures as maybe kind of a, for grounding and kind of a roadmap for how that stuff all plays out.
Yeah, and
I mean, maybe America is different, but I don't know.
I think we're just young is the thing. Like, we're just so young as a country.
Yeah,
and whenever I talk to Dan about this, we talk about like pre-prohibition and stuff, and it's like, oh man, like our entire history fits. You know, like you look at a brewery like Wein Stefan, and it's just, you just look at how far it stretches back, and you're just like, oh yeah, no. There can be things like that in the world, I guess. And I think we're just such like a hyper young country that when you think about like the grand scope of time and how long these things can stay sort of where they are. We haven't discovered, you know, our potential for that quite yet, just as a country in general. But as we're, you know, starting to wrap up the conversation, one thing I wanted to ask you, and you said you have Pilsner in your glass right now, but whenever we have sort of guests that aren't Dan, I do like to ask, what are you trying to get into your glass right now? What are you finding you are gravitating towards sort of over and over again these days? And it absolutely does not have to be a New Glarus beer if that is not where your mind is at.
Well, okay. I cannot let this appearance go without pouring one out for Kid Kolsch. Because I love
that beer.
When I did my 10th anniversary column a couple of years ago, I was like, I picked some of my favorite beers, and people ask me, obviously, like when you're a beer columnist, people ask you, oh, what's your favorite beer all the time? And I truly don't have a favorite beer.
Yeah.
Really. But if people press me, I would be like, well, it might be Kid Kolsch.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it is with a heavy heart that I saw this Pilsner. And then I think of the Alonzo Mourning. I'm pretty online, so I think in terms of GIFs sometimes. And the Alonzo Mourning GIF where he's sitting on the bench and he's shaking his head and he's kind of sour. And then that head shake turns into a nodding yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was me drinking this Pilsner, because I'm like, it means I'm not getting Kid Kolsch this summer. So that's very sad, but it does mean that the beer is very good. So whatever. Okay. So what am I seeking out aside from Kid Kolsch, which I'm not getting this year? Thanks, Dan. it is beers like Pilsner. I have a lot of lagers in my beer, in my fridge. I kind of bifurcate a little bit in that I like either very light beers or very dark beers or very hoppy beers. So
yes,
there's a lot of double IPAs in there. There's a lot of stouts, big porters. I've got, just thinking stuff top of my head right now, I know there's always Expedition in there. Bell's Expedition is one of my favorite beers. I usually kind of sample around with the IPAs and double IPAs. I know there's a Edmund Fitzgerald from Great Lakes in there right now. I'm excited about the new or the relaunch of Ale Asylum, and that they're having Ambergeddon coming back. So that's cool.
Yeah.
That's a beer that I like. I'm definitely a generalist. I drink a lot of different types of beer. Some of that is professional due diligence, but most of it is, that's what I like to drink. Yeah. I will say that I do have multiple 12 packs of Pilsner in my closet. Not all in the fridge right now, because I don't know. I saw how quickly that beer was moving and how popular it seemed to be. I heard a little recon from Milwaukee, how quickly it was moving on draft.
Oh, nice.
And I started thinking, boy, this is a beer with six. This is almost a month ago now. So it was like right at its launch, knowing that it's a 6 week turn to get more of that beer. I was like, well, I'm just going to make sure that I'm not running out of this in June when I want it.
So. Yeah. Decisions were being made. on what to stock or what you needed to stock up on. That makes a lot of sense.
I imagine.
Chris.
And I imagine Dan has been working hard to make sure that that doesn't happen, but I didn't want to leave it out of my control. So I stocked up a little bit.
Exactly. That's why, what I always say is, if you find something you like, man, you just buy it. Cause you never, it's like Costco, man. You never know if they're bringing that thing back to the shelves, you know?
Yeah, totally. And, you know, one other thing that I have started to say a lot, especially we started to say this, during the pandemic, during the early stages of the pandemic, and haven't really stopped saying it. One of the media things that I do that we didn't mention is the Badger Beer Hour, which is the monthly live stream that you can find on my Twitter.
Oh, very cool.
It's the third Wednesday of each month. And I, with my two co-hosts and I, we kind of do news and kind of reviews, and we have an interview every month. But one of the things that we started talking about a lot during that time was If you, and this is kind of the mantra of buying local and eating local and drinking local, all that stuff. If there's something that you value, make sure that your spending is in line with those values.
No, I absolutely love it. And Chris, I thank you a lot for your time, and I really enjoyed our conversation, and I'm going to look forward to reading your column for many more years. And again, I you're a great follow on Twitter. You're always great for the beer content and conversation. So thank you for taking the time and giving us an hour of your evening.
I appreciate it, Scott. And good work with this podcast. It's been a really revealing and interesting insight into what's going on at New Glarus. So,
well, thank you very much.
You and Dan.
Oh, well, thank you very much for that. And yeah, Dan is the driving heart of the podcast, because that guy is just a wellspring of just so much beer knowledge. Like,
he is an exceptional interview.
Oh,
that is coming through in the podcast for sure. So,
oh yeah, and the stuff he can just pull off the top of his head is insanity to me. The guy is so smart about beer. So I have enjoyed it. Well, thank you, Chris.
I would say that he has. Yeah, you bet. I would say that he has forgotten more than I've ever known about beer, but I doubt that he's actually forgotten anything about beer. So
100%. Have a good night, Chris.
All right. Thanks a lot, Scott.
Thanks.